This is Not Quite Dead,
a Gal Pal horror movie discussion podcast.
We do deep dives on our favorite scary movies.
But sometimes we really just like to keep it shallow.
I'm your host, Kate.
I'm Megan.
Get ready for all the spoilers. Did you know that the two lead actresses in this movie are both Australian?
No. Oh, good for them. There are so many good Aussie actresses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know I'm obsessed with Nicole Kidman.
Toni Collette.
We did talk about that. Mm-hmm. Margot Robbie.
Mm-hmm. Toni Collette is...
Hugh Jackman.
One of my favorite actresses of all time.
Yeah. She's so good. I think the first thing I saw her in where I was like, oh, this woman is fantastic, was United States of Tara. Did you ever watch that?
I didn't, but I know what it's about.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Well, Toni Collette's not in this movie, but our two Australian main actresses, I've never seen them before in anything.
Yeah, they both... been in a number of things, not a huge amount. Lily Sullivan, she started getting active work in 2012, so she's been on the scene for about 10 years. And she's been in a, you know, dozen different TV shows and movies. And then Alyssa Sutherland, who is our other lead here, she hasn't been in very much. She... mm-hmm. was in, let's see, about six movies. And in 2019, she was in another horror movie. So I'm wondering if she's going to try and like do a little bit more of the horror movie path.
I really like these women that kind of just stick with horror. You know, you pick a genre and that's what you're good at and that's what you stick to. But I love these horror genre women. I'm like, it feels like somebody... I can live vicariously through, because if I were somehow for some reason turned into an actress, that would be the genre I'd pick.
Yeah, it's nice seeing people who are willing to be scream queens and just mm-hmm. lean into their strengths and go for it. And especially when they go for really interesting roles. We are talking about Evil Dead Rise today.
Yay. I actually am not the biggest Evil Dead fan. I like it. I think it's a great franchise. It's super fun. And it's one of those cool movies or, you know, group of movies where the follow-up really just takes a turn. Like Evil Dead 2 kind of stays true to Evil Dead 1, and then Evil Dead 3, which is Army of Darkness, just goes off the rails, and it's like a comedy. It's very goofy and campy, and so you don't know what's coming next with this franchise. Are they going to continue the camp, or are they going to return to their very creepy roots? And Evil Dead Rise is definitely in the realm of creepy. It is very creepy.
It is creepy. I do think that it's got its funny moments too. Mm-hmm. I have seen Evil Dead 1 and 2 and, oh God, what's the third one?
Army of Darkness.
I've seen Evil Dead 1 and 2, Army of Darkness. I did not see the 2013 Evil Dead. Did you see that one?
I did. And it was also creepy. Like when I was so pleased by that remake. Yeah. It was a really nice update. Like it was the same story. It was the same thing happening, but gnarlier. Like in a modern, it felt modernized for what they were doing. And I was like, this is great. This is a really great remake for a younger audience. It's like the same idea. But now it feels like more accessible to a modern audience, I think, a modern horror audience. I loved it. That was great.
I was so pleasantly surprised by Evil Dead Rise for how many homages there were to the earlier movies in the franchises, but also you did not need to have seen the earlier ones to enjoy this one.
Right.
Like, there was enough for this one to totally stand on its own and be enjoyable. It's been a long time since I've watched the Evil Dead movies, the earlier ones. And this definitely makes me want to go back and watch Evil Dead from 2013. I can't believe there were 10 years in between these last two movies.
I do recommend it. Yeah, that's so long. I didn't realize it had been that long. And it, yeah, this, I think this is a great entry. It really ties together that remake as well as is a great homage to the original series. There are so many tidbits in this movie that will hearken to back to the original.
This one was directed by Lee Cronin, who I had not heard before. And when I realized that the two lead actresses were Australian, I assumed he was an Australian guy. But he's not. He's an Irish filmmaker.
He's not. Oh.
This is only his second feature film ever made.
Oh. Wow. What else does he do?
He has done a handful of short films and didn't seem to, you know, pick up any feature films until 2019 with another horror movie. The Hole in the Ground was his debut, and he wrote and directed that one. And then in 2023 he wrote and directed Evil Dead Rise.
Wow. I want to check out Hole in the Ground. I was really pleased with this one, so I'm going to definitely look at that. That's an Irish film, right?
Yes. I think that one looks really good and very different from Evil Dead Rise. I mean, this one has a lot of history attached to it.
Yeah, Evil Dead is unique, to say the least. It's a cool concept. Rotten Tomato certification on this was 84%. And fam, we are seeking to become Rotten Tomato certified ourselves. We would like to pitch in to this percentage that you see. So the best way you can help us get to that certification is by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review, of course, because we're a 5-star podcast. As soon as we hit 200 reviews there, we're eligible to become Rotten Tomato certified. So take a break, go give us a quick review, and come right back to the episode.
That 84% totally deserved. I'll save our full review for the end, but audiences really agreed. This movie had a budget of between 15 and 19 million. It's not confirmed yet what the actual amount was, but it grossed 146 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So potentially almost 10 times what was put in. That's insane. Good job. Good job, everybody.
I know. I think that audiences are willing to, you know, reward good movies. I think that a lot of people in Hollywood and in the movie theater industry have been really like hand-wringing over this post-pandemic slump in the movie theaters. But I think that with, you know, Barbenheimer, we saw like,
oh my gosh,
you know, Barbie made $1 billion internationally. Yeah. Oppenheimer made a ton of money. Evil Dead came out at the beginning of this year, made a huge amount of money for a horror movie too. Like, horror movies like don't usually make 10x their budget unless it's like a Purge movie.
No. This is one of those movies that falls into that category of established franchises. And if you go back to the remake back in 2013, that movie's budget was similar. It was $17 million and it made $97 million. Like, that's something you're going to want to continue doing. This did even better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if they did not wait 10 more years to make another one.
Sure. I'm happy about that. I mean, it's been quality, right? Like, I to me, this has been like quality after quality. It's actually made me more invested in the original Evil Dead movie. It's made me want to go back and watch it even more. So I think they're on the right track, which is such a breath of fresh air in this new world of remakes and requels.
Oh my gosh, that Scream 6 vocabulary is still getting me because I still think about requels all the time.
Yeah. Should we get a quick summary of the plot so we can jump in?
Let's do it. This movie opens with Beth, our protagonist, learning in the dirtiest bathroom in the world that she is pregnant.
I wrote that down too.
And deciding that she is going to go drop in on her sister and her three kids to kind of deal with this. Shortly after arriving at her sister's apartment in LA, there is an earthquake, and the three kids go and do a little exploring where they find a cavern opened up underneath their apartment complex. And in this cavern, there is the Necronomicon. The kids see this spooky paraphernalia and decide to steal it instead of leaving it where it is and take it up into their apartment. They play some records they probably shouldn't play. They've got a, you know, book with teeth and like human skin leather on the outside of it that they're flipping through. And it, of course, raises the dead. Or in this movie, it really raises some evil spirits that then start wreaking havoc in their lives. The spirit first possesses their mom, Ellie, Beth's sister, and they have to fight her off. And this possession of spirits just kind of makes its way through the household, with Beth trying valiantly to protect the kids. And this is a very scary Evil Dead movie. So there's lots of jump scares, lots of gross outs, lots of death in this one, lots of fake out deaths. You think someone's dead, but because they're already possessed by a dead spirit, they come right back.
Yeah.
The big climax, big fight scene at the end is Beth and her niece, Cassie, having to fight this very Lovecraftian monster of the mom and her two siblings melded together with cameos by a wood chipper and a chainsaw, of course.
It's very The Thing, what we end up with at the end of the movie. Gross and great. It's like The Thing meets Fargo, we'll say.
Yeah, perfect blend.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on this in your summary of summaries. There's like three plots kind of happening. Like, Beth is pregnant. She's got to deal with that. The sister relationship between Beth and the sister relationship between Ellie and Beth needs some work. And then the Necronomicon, which is actually the major thread of the movie. But we start this movie with an epilogue. It's like one of those 3 days ago or whatever. I forget the time frame we're dealing with here, but we start the movie with characters that we never see again in the movie.
We do. We start with a very classic like lake house cabin scene. You know, we've got, you know, attractive young people on a dock by the lake. And one of the girls goes to go check on her friend, Jessica, and Jessica seems like she's sick. She's got a blanket over her, and she's like not really playing along until she gets real creepy real fast.
Yeah. Oh man, her. There's a lot of people facing the wrong way in this movie while talking to you, or people being in a specific location, and you would expect to hear them a specific way, but it sounds like they're right next to you. The way they do the sound in this movie, it's so creepy. And you can tell that it's not the audience hearing it that way. It's the characters hearing it that way. And that's the first like creepy scene we get, is this sister turned around reading out loud, or saying out loud, what the other sister is reading on a page. And it creeped me out quite a bit right away. I really liked how they started in a cabin, because that's Evil Dead. Evil Dead takes place in the woods in a cabin. And that's where you think this movie is going to take place due to this epilogue. Obviously, it twists that around, but it's a cool way to jump in.
I like that it kind of sets you off kilter, because the movie does not waste any time killing people in a pretty spectacular fashion. I love the possessed voice. The possessed voice is really cool. I like that.
It's so good.
The friend is reading Wuthering Heights, which is a ghost story. So we've got like a nice little tie in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you just know that the deaths are going to be so out of pocket in this movie when the first death is a scalping.
Oh, it's so gnarly. And I was like, oh, I was not expecting that right now. This woman with her, and it's, you know, you get scalpings. I watched Dances with Wolves, right? And they talk about scalpings, and you see like a dead body with its like scalp removed. But you don't see the scalp. Like, you don't see what it's actually nasty. Looks like. Oh, it's the most disgusting thing. And she's still alive. Like, you can survive a scalping, which is somehow more horrifying than dying from one.
It's awful. Absolutely awful. And then, of course, the boyfriend gets decapitated in the lake.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. That was a great death. It didn't look as good. Like, the head on the dock wasn't as good looking, but it was still like, oh, shit. This is serious shit. Ugh. And she has to, like, watch this guy's head fly off with her scalped head dripping blood into the lake. Oh, man. What a scene. What a good way to start a horror movie.
It's such a good way to start. I absolutely loved Jessica's possessed body floating over the lake as the title card rose.
Oh, me too. Man, I wrote that down too. I love the title card in all caps. Yeah, so stylistic and so imposing. Like, what is that character now gonna do? Where does this ghosty thing, where does this evil entity go next? What's gonna happen? Yeah. I'm already like excited for the sequel to this.
I know. I love the way that they bookended this movie with this time shenanigans, because it wasn't clear to me on watching it the first time where the opening scene was in relation to the events of the rest of the movie. And then you get to the end of the movie and you realize, oh, this whole movie was actually a prelude to the lake.
Yes.
Scene. And so then you're like, you're gotten twice by this movie, where you're like dropped in at the beginning on your head to this like totally insane like 5-minute sequence, and then at the end of the movie you realize like, oh, they didn't defeat the evil. It's still out in the world and it's still gonna kill people.
Yeah They're like, yep, you're getting a sequel, don't worry. Yeah, I like how they trick you. Like, you, it's an epilogue story, but actually it's the beginning of the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
So get ready. But right after this epilogue, they drop us into plot C, which is, hey, Beth is pregnant and now she's got to deal with it. And she finds out at that horrible, grimy club.
Yeah, she's a guitar tech, which is the excuse for her being in this disgusting bathroom. I cannot imagine taking a pregnancy test anywhere but the comfort of my own home. Like, doing it in public and having someone banging on the door while you're trying to do it.
I'm trying to imagine what would make somebody feel like, I have to take this test now, here in this place. And I can only think of, oh, this person's overworked. They're just always at the office, quote unquote.
Yeah, I was like, oh, maybe she's doing like a tour life where she doesn't have like a permanent address and she's just like on the road.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of the impression that we get from her. I mean, they don't ever talk about who the father is.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's not important, I guess.
Yeah, not important who the father is. And she goes to go see her sister to kind of deal with the pregnancy stuff, but she doesn't end up telling her sister because of all the shit going on with the dead being raised and everything. But they do.
You're right.
Yeah, but later.
I forgot. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Later, when Ellie, her sister, is possessed, she can hear, which means that Beth is actually fairly far along to hear a heartbeat.
Yeah.
She can hear that there's two heartbeats. And that's when she's like, oh, you're pregnant. And she says those like funny exorcist level insults at her.
She's like, two souls. Mm-hmm. And that was a creepy moment too. Like, being, you know, you would know this more than me, but I can empathize. Like, being pregnant, you're automatically just more susceptible to problems, evil, whatever, right? Like, whatever's coming your way, like, you're more at risk. You're carrying some other person inside of you. Like, that's horrifying to be like, she's on the ground, she's pinned, and she's got this horrible monster woman version of her sister threatening to steal the souls of her and her unborn child. Like, that's freaky. I would be horrified. Because now at this point, like, even for an atheist, right? Like, because I'm very much an atheist, but at this point, if this is happening to me and this person has been possessed and is on top of me and is talking about my soul, I'm like, oh, shit, I don't want to deal with this for all of eternity. I need to figure this out. Like, I'm fucked.
I know. I can't imagine what a possessed fetus looks like. Like, that's the thing that my brain was going towards was the possessed version of Elle was trying to like get into her belly, and I was like, what is she going to do? Like, whatever she was gonna do was like too horrible to film. Like, they did not take it there.
yeah I was kind of glad. I was like, please don't fuck with this uterus. Like, I don't want to watch this woman get gorged like through her vagina. Like,
right.
You know, and
this
I'm
is this
didn't.
Is not Lars von Trier. Like,
yeah. It also reminded me of the Dawn of the Dead remake, because there's a character there where a woman is pregnant and she turns, and so the baby turns, and the baby's born, and the baby's a zombie. And I was like, like, what is this baby gonna
That's
do from the inside?
That's
ooh, so
right.
creepy. Yeah,
so creepy. I know. I feel like pregnancy and horror is like kind of like one of the more like existentially horrifying things, because you just have to consider like, what do you do when there's something that's possessed or turned inside of you? What happens if you turn? What happens
to
their soul versus your soul? Like, there's just so much that like, and then also just like the horror of childbirth, like on top of that, where it's like, oh, something has to come out of you. At some point, and that thing that comes out of you might be a zombie.
It's like, being pregnant is not bad enough. Like, you have to get destroyed by your offspring that's not even out of you yet. So creepy. Yeah, scary. I love that moment. It was very creepy.
So creepy. I think that Beth, like, her journey with her pregnancy in this movie. I wasn't totally sure where they were going to take it. I could have guessed, but I was glad to see that it's not that she becomes more maternal by the end of the movie, but she really steps up to protect Cassie and the other kids. I mean, the other kids don't make it, but as best as she can, she protects Cassie.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that. It's funny because going into this movie, I was like, ugh, the kids aren't going to get it, right? Because the kids never get it. It's always a very Hollywood happy ending. And then the kids start getting it. And I was like, oh, what's going to happen with this one? This is interesting. Like, it's a little more real. Like, of course these kids would get it. It would be awful. Like, they wouldn't know what to do. Little girl makes it. I appreciated that. Like, it's the end of this aunt's arc, right? Like, she can take care of a child. I know she was concerned about that, and that sort of ties into B plot, right? But her niece, I love the line her niece delivers where she says, oh, you'd be a good parent because you know how to lie to kids about being okay.
I know, she's such a funny little girl. I was glad that Cassie made it. Totally agree with your point about the other kids getting it. I thought it was going to be maybe one of those movies like Fear Street or something where the kids were actually going to be the protagonists. You know, I didn't know where they were going to take it. So the fact that the older two got possessed and killed in like pretty spectacular ways was unexpected and really great.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
I had, while watching this, been thinking about, okay, if our C plot is, you know, best pregnancy, our B plot really felt like this rocky relationship between Ellie and Beth was going to need some kind of mending or something to go forward, because that's like, as soon as they get together, there's conflict.
Beth is hanging out with bands, like rock bands, all day, all the time. And so that comes with its own set of connotations. Like, you're a roadie, you sleep around with all the band members, and Beth has this like chip on her shoulder about it. While Ellie has been going through her own shit, she is recently, kind of recently, within the last few months, divorced, and she's a single mom now. And she has tried reaching out to her sister, but her sister has just not responded or ignored her. And so they have this friction between them that you think the movie is going to take you through. And it doesn't.
It doesn't. I thought it was so funny that the beginning of this movie, I felt like, laid a lot of groundwork for potential plot lines to go. And I was like, oh, this like sister relationship, they're going to fight against the Evil Dead together.
Yeah.
And come out stronger for it. And like so quickly, Ellie gets possessed and then is just like done for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because Ellie is on all the posters. Like, you know that something happens to Ellie because you see the red hair in the posters and it says mommy. I forget what the tagline is. Something about mommy.
It's like mommy loves you or something. Yeah. Loves
something
you to death.
Something like that. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And so you know something's going to happen to this woman. And I'm like, well, they put her on all the posters, so she'll probably come out of this okay. Like, that's how I went into this, because I'm just so conditioned to assume those things. And no, like, Beth has to have her reconciliation with the monster of her sister. Like, later on in the movie, she's like, she freaks out. She kind of like has this moment where she yells about how she's not a roadie. Like, she is like a serious person, right? Like, she's not a slut, blah blah blah, because the Evil Dead version of her sister is calling her all these horrible things. And so they kind of touch on it that way, but there's really no real resolution, because you know the sister is no longer the sister at that point.
Yes, there's all of this tension at the beginning between Beth feeling like her sister doesn't take her seriously and is inadequate in her sister's eyes. Ellie rightfully being pissed at her sister for being flaky and self-centered.
Yeah.
And I really commend Ellie that for the most part, when she was possessed, she was really, really fighting against being possessed. She would occasionally be herself and would say to mm-hmm. Beth, like, you need to protect the kids. You need to do something.
Yeah.
And so if we're being generous about their relationship, I'm like, well, that's how I guess Beth proved herself to Ellie in the end was like, she tried her best to protect the kids. Like she came through kind of because only one out of the three made it.
I know. I mean, you can only do so much. This is like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this evil entity? Like, I don't know the rules. I don't know what I'm allowed to do or what works. And yeah, I get it. And I liked that I liked that bow at the end of that arc. Like, not everybody got what they wanted, but there was some growth for Beth. There was some, like, reflection, and she's not a terrible person. She'll be all right. Like, she can raise a child because she saved one from an evil entity. I guess, yeah. She has that little moment, which is good.
I do love that these sisters feel like real sisters in some ways. Like, they both have, if not like typical jobs, they both have like real people jobs. Like, one of them is like kind of a roadie guitar tech, and then the other one is a tattoo artist. And like, the tattoo artist single mom is living in a condemned apartment building. I'm like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
Like, her apartment was really cozy, and like, she made it super cute. And I was like, oh, this is like a really nice, like, homey place. But also, you have to leave in a month. That sucks.
Yeah. I can't imagine dealing with that. That'd be so stressful.
I know. And then the insults that the possessed mom pulls out. It's just deep so cuts. So cunty. Like, I could not get over it. It was so funny. Like, she calls her kids like titty suckers or something at one point. Like,
yes. Yes. This, I love that about this movie. And we'll probably talk about it more, but it's such a great homage to the original movie, because the original movie was also very gross. Like, they were saying nasty things to each other. You were like, what is wrong with this person I've known my whole life? They're saying horrible things to me. Like, yeah, because they're not themselves anymore. They're just like nasty little demons that want to get under your skin in the quickest and most horrible way possible. And they do that in this movie. Like, they say horrible things to each other.
I love it. I love it that there's a pocket of demon or possession movies where they just lean in on them saying the foulest, most hurtful things that they possibly can, because mm-hmm. it's shocking. It's really funny in some ways because it's so shocking. And yeah, it goes back to the original, which is great.
There's a line from the, well, it's a record, right, that they're playing. There's a line on that record from the dude who made the recording where he's like, you know, they just want, these evil spirits, like, want chaos. They want to, like, frighten you with chaos and, you know, just terrify you and make you unsettled, like, this sort of vibe. And that's exactly what's happening. They're just being horrible. Even at one point, even Beth is like, I'm not a slut. You know, like, she reacts to this thing as if it's her sister. And I'm like, girl, like, this isn't your, don't worry about it. Like, don't get stressed out. This thing is not real. But of course, like, if you're being called horrible things by somebody you think you know and love, it might do things to you.
Well, I think that brings us to our A plot.
Yeah. this is the big deal, right? The kids, of course, somebody has to find the Necronomicon. That always has to happen in an Evil Dead movie.
And boy, do they find it. That scene of Danny. Yeah. That scene of Dan.
Yeah.
Going into that cavern under their apartments. I was like, I don't know. This is really full of crosses. I don't know if I would be poking around in here.
Yeah. Okay, like they had so many chances to put this book away and just not have this happen. Like wouldn't you stop when the voices start changing on the record or when the teeth move on the book? Because the book teeth like open, or maybe like when the blood soaks into the cover like a freaking sponge, because that's not normal.
I would have packed my shit up and left when the top of that crypt opened and a billion cockroaches flew out.
Yes.
I am done.
Yes. Like, it's so that's gross. Enough. That's not even otherworldly.
No.
Like,
it's not.
That would be enough to keep me away. I'd be like, okay, I'm done. Fuck this.
I know.
Dude, yeah.
Oh, God.
I wrote that down. Kate, I wrote that down. Cockroaches are flying. I'm the fuck out of there. Like, that's all it would take.
That's all it would take for me, too. I think that.
Yeah.
I like to think that I would not have even gone into the cavern, but had I gone into the cavern and a giant crucifix of Jesus Christ fell at me, that would have been my second time to leave. And then my third time to leave would have been the cockroaches. And this is all prior to even touching the Necronomicon.
The book. Yeah. What is it with this kid? Oh my gosh. You need to teach Levi. Don't touch any Necronomicons if you see them.
Did you catch one of the cameos on the phonograph when the voices were changing, though?
I didn't.
One of the cameos is Bruce Campbell's voice.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What was his line?
He is one of the people... one of the archaeologists who's like warning them, but he only has one line. Yeah, he's not the main archaeologist talking through the multiple phonographs, but he's just one line in one of them.
I'm glad he was involved.
Yeah, me too.
Bruce Campbell is a gem. I love him.
I know, he's great. He and Sam Raimi were executive producers on this one.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. I was really worried, I guess you could say, when the record starts playing, because it's very explainy. It gives all the instructions for how to deal with this thing. And that was probably my one gripe with this movie, is that we have to rely on something absurd. Like, Kate, I don't know, man. Like, was that normal? Like, let's think, right? This would have taken place in the 70s and they would have made a record. Like, is that something professors did? Is that something that is reasonable to expect from that time period?
Well, the crypt, it was from 1923.
Okay, sure. So let's say the 20s, like.
I don't know.
Is that reasonable to expect this kind of dictation?
I really don't know. I did not love how exposition heavy it was either.
Yeah.
But I respected that it was something different than the kids cracking open the Necronomicon and trying to read, like, from the Necronomicon. Like, the Necronomicon just had, like, those really gruesome, like, images and then a language that they couldn't read. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, right. If we're gonna get exposition on what's happening, this is okay. Although I felt like it went on kind of long. Like, I wish that it was a little zippier.
Okay. I'm glad you felt that way. Cause that was honestly my only issue with this movie, is that, and I was kind of thinking, like, well, what else would they have done? right? Like, and I'm not a writer, so I wasn't quite sure, but I was like, I'll let it pass because the rest of the movie is so good. Yeah.
I think that they brought it back for me with at the beginning of playing the phonograph records through the DJ equipment that Dan has. That distorted voice again sounded like yes. the possessed voice. That was really cool. And then I like that the book reacted to hearing the voice on the phonograph.
I really did enjoy that it became its own creepy thing. It wasn't just a recording that was convenient for the audience. It was actually still a creepy moment. But it sucks when they open this book, right? That's when the mom gets it. Mom is like in the elevator. Ugh.
I liked the irony of the mom telling the kids, like, you never take an elevator after an earthquake. And then she gets in the elevator, and then that's where she's attacked and possessed.
What was that? Yeah. I was like, you just said not to use an elevator. Like, why are you in the elevator?
Exactly.
Also, a really nice throwback to the original. She's, like, attacked by elevator cables, and they wrap around her and pull her body and contort it the way they want to. And it's really reminiscent of the first one where the girl has like roots tied around her limbs and does things to her. I'm kind of glad they didn't go that route with this movie, but it was still a nice callback.
I had my running list of Sam Raimi-isms. This was not directed by Sam Raimi, but I felt like Cronin did a good job of, like you said, making references or homages, things that were like direct callbacks. And I always feel like Sam Raimi likes his actors to be very, very physical in their roles. Mm-hmm. Like their like eyes are like popping and their veins are bulging and they're like being contorted and twisted. And like you can see their like muscles straining. Like, it's such a like physically intense like process for them. Like, I think about Ash in Army of Darkness and just like how crazy his face looks all the time. Like, I felt like seeing Ellie in the elevator like really brought that back, just seeing her like physically fighting and then like being overtaken by the spirit.
It was really hard to watch. I had a really hard time watching it because she looked so miserable. Like, she was suffering so much, and it was really tough. Great scene.
I have to say, Ellie is the perfect horror movie actress. Just the way she looks. Her face is perfect to play a possessed demon. Yeah. I mean that very complimentary. Yes.
Yeah.
She has incredible cheekbones. Her I just feel like she's got really good control of her face. Like, she just really looks super spooky. Like, I think that between the costuming, makeup, and just who she is as a person, like, really, really good.
That scene with her at the stove really freaked me out. She's like making eggs. I don't know, scrambling them, and she like starts breaking them, and they're like, I don't know, they're all over the place. They're all over the place in the pan. She breaks too many, and they're like on the floor, and then like blood is in the eggs, and she starts saying creepy shit again with her back turned to the family. She vomits. She creepy crawls. Like, she is just so creepy as a character, and I was so tense the first time and even the second time, like waiting for her to do something to them. Cause I was like, this, I've seen Evil Dead. These ghosts don't stay put, like, or spirits, whatever they are, demons, they come after you. So I was just like waiting, like, when is she going to go and attack them? And it was so tense. Like, I hate that moment with her cooking over a hot stove. It freaked me out so much just waiting for her to do something.
I know. The eggs were really disgusting. There were several moments, especially early on with her possession, that really reminded me of Hereditary.
Yes.
Where she's like hitting her head against the door.
Yes.
I was like, oh, Hereditary. And then when she's like crawling and she's like kind of crawling up the wall, I was like, oh, that's totally Hereditary. And it's just so,
yeah.
I'm like getting goosebumps talking about it because it's so fucking creepy.
Yeah. It really is. She has this line where the kids are like, are you okay, mom? Basically, right? Like she's about to turn around and deal with them. And she goes, mommy's with the maggots, in that horrible voice. And I was like, ooh, this is so good. Like, I wouldn't know what to do in this situation. I'd wet my freaking pants.
I know. I was really glad when they lock her in that room. Although
yes.
These are crafty little spirits because they know, like, if they just wait, they can lure one of them into unlocking the door. And she does lure Cassie eventually into unlocking the door. So that she can get out. I mean, there's like
the little baby.
Yeah. I mean, she just at this point, she's like, it's my mom. She's talking to me like she's my mom.
Yeah.
When Ellie is dead, quote unquote dead, when Beth and the kids and the neighbors are all like, okay, we're going to put her in the bed and leave her here and try and call for help. You know, they're figuring out like they're basically trapped. There's two things that happened in this scene that I thought were so creepy. One of them was the fly landing on her open eye.
Oh, yes. I wrote that down. Yeah.
And her eye moving, like open, moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so creepy. And then the other was when Beth hears Ellie like talking to her through the phone.
The message, so creepy. Right? It's like a message. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like listening to
left earlier.
Yeah. She's like listening to her voicemail and then it like turns into what we would think of as like maybe Ellie's spirit or something, like calling out for help. I just thought that was so creepy.
It was super gross and creepy. And then they finally get – so she awakens in bed, right? They've put her in bed. And then she wakes up and they deal with her and, like, throw her out in the hallway. Which, by the way, is one thing I love about this series is that these spirits, once they enter a body, like, they become completely trapped by the physicality of our world. And it's just sort of funny. They throw her in the hallway and it's like, okay, you can stay out there, I guess. But the neighbors are out there. The neighbors are out there and Ellie eats this guy's eye.
Yeah, she plucks his eye, puts it in her mouth, and then she like, I was like, oh, is this supposed to be like a 3D? This so Sam Raimi. So yes. Sam Raimi. Yeah. The like spitting of the eyeball into the other guy's mouth.
Yeah. It's very silly.
It's so silly.
But I enjoyed it. Yeah. I felt so bad for the neighbors that were stuck outside with her because they didn't have all this prior knowledge. They were like, oh, it's just Ellie. We know her. She's our friend. Oh, God, she's killing us. It just became a nightmare really fast.
She kills them all. Ellie gets a lot in on them. When she... Oh, this was horrible. When she stabs Beth through the palm with the glass.
Oh,
that was so brutal.
Yes, that was. I think about that a lot. Like when I see stuff like that happen to characters and they live through it and it's like they're dealing with it and they've got their adrenaline running and they're trying to survive. I'm trying to imagine, like, what would I do? Like, I'm trying to imagine a shard of glass going through my hand. Like, what would that feel like? And would I be able to go on? Like, would my adrenaline, this is me, maybe not understanding biology, but like, would my adrenaline protect me and help me like keep going? Right. Or would I just like crumble under the pain of a shard going through my hand?
I always think about there's the pain of it going in, but then there's the pain of removing it. So I think that's what I would struggle with is like, okay, if I'm going to keep going, if I haven't just totally frozen in my fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah.
The shard of glass needs to come out. And I don't know if I could do it. Yeah. I think I'd have to have someone else do it for me.
Yeah. I'd do it for you, Kate.
Thanks.
It'd be terrible. The kids start getting picked off too.
They do. The kids getting picked off initiated for me tracking some stuff that came up from at the beginning of the movie that then was essential to the plot later in the movie. And one of them was, and I really appreciated this with this plot. I felt like the plot was really, really tight because it felt like things that they introduced were not just like useless background detail, like, oh yeah, the Dan loves DJing and that's it. We're never going to deal with his DJing again. It's like, no, he actually has the equipment to play these like 100-year-old phonograph records.
Yeah.
That was cool. The mom is a tattoo artist, which means that she has a tattoo gun.
Yeah.
And that's what she attacks Bridget with, her daughter.
I really liked Bridget. I really appreciated Bridget as a character because she's this like angsty teenager kind of. She's still a good, she's a good kid. Like she gets along with her family and stuff. She takes care of her sister when she's freaked out. But she has this moment where she's like, I need this shirt for this thing I'm going to. Mom, when are you doing this? When are you doing the laundry? And it's an Eat the Rich shirt. It's just such a good, like, ironic moment between a teenager and their mother. Like, what's the message you believe in here, Bridget? Eat the rich. Like, go ahead and wear your dirty shirt then.
Yeah, I know.
Go to your punk party with your dirty shirt. It's fine.
It's so funny. I was really hoping that this party or the Eat the Rich shirt would come back because the other items that the kids had all came back. It didn't, unfortunately. But yeah. I did think that that was funny. Bridget was a pretty like good, non-annoying character. I felt like she was a very standard like teen character. Absolutely hated that black goo pouring out of her face.
I know.
When she gets infected. Gross. Yeah.
I liked her a lot and I was sad when she got it, but I was like, I'm glad because that's what would happen in this scenario. Oh, the glass coming out of her throat is disgusting.
Oh man, glass eating. I think we talked about this in Oculus, but we like did. Horrible. Yes. I feel like Cassie, the youngest daughter, is never going to recover from stabbing her sister through the head with her doll toy.
Yes. I really hope in like 10 years we get another sequel and Cassie is the same actress and she's like dealing with this and she becomes like the new Ash or something because she went through some shit.
That would be fun. Yeah, I thought that the Bridget possession was pretty solid because we had like the full journey where we see her get attacked and wounded. And this is something I was maybe a little bit vague on, was like, how is this possession transferring? Because it seems like Ellie was attacked in the elevator. Bridget was wounded with a tattoo gun or tattoo machine. And then Danny was stabbed a million times. Yeah, he was stabbed.
Yeah.
And then that's what possessed him.
Yeah.
But
then at the end, you have Cassie and Beth like basically drinking the blood of these spirit infested hosts. And I mean, because it's all over them, right? Like they put this monster through a wood chipper or something, and like blood gets everywhere and drips into their mouths and their eyes, like
even any
facial orifice they have. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, why aren't they possessed? What are the rules for that? Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. The only thing I can think of is if these demons are trying to cause chaos and discord and trauma, yeah. like it benefits you to have like a couple people who are still human and not possessed to terrorize. Because if everybody's mm-hmm. a demon, then like no one's a demon. You know, everyone's yeah. just like, oh, we're all demons. It's cool. We have no one yeah. to insult anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I always imagine these things want world domination, right? Or do demons just want to terrorize a family and they feed off that? Like, how do demons work? In this movie, in this franchise, this whole franchise is a bit vague, right? Like, what is stopping this demon from taking over the world and making us all little weird monsters? Maybe that's not the goal. And like, maybe I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. On the one hand, I kind of appreciate it because I feel like when franchises try and build up too much lore, then they kind of paint themselves into a corner plot-wise.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay with them not doing too much of that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm like, oh, it would be nice to know what the stakes are. Like, if the stakes yes. are like, oh, the whole world is going to be overrun, like, that's one thing. But if the stakes are like, oh, the demons are just going to like kind of infiltrate a household at a time. And so it's going to be like yeah. really, really, really targeted to the household. Like, that's still really yeah. cool, but it's a very different scale.
Yeah. And maybe that's part of the chaos. Like, they are not telling us. They're yeah. just going to terrorize us. Yeah. That scene where they are circling the car to stay away from the thing monster, right, that we see, mm-hmm. the Evil Dead Rise monster that's an amalgamation of everything it's killed. Those types of scenes always, they're scary because you realize, like, any mess up, you could, like, that's it for you. But, you know, watching it, I was like, this movie doesn't, I don't want this movie to have this. Like, they should be found out already. There's no way to hide from this thing. But it was super creepy to watch. That was a very creepy moment, I thought, when they're circling the car.
Yes. Them circling the car was creepy. The whole, like, parking lot scene with the convenient wood chipper and chainsaw.
mm-hmm. Yes. Another nice homage.
Yep.
I'm glad we got the chainsaw.
Yeah, I felt like once we hit the climax of the movie, I was starting to lose steam from scariness, because then it felt mm-hmm. more like an action sequence than a horror yes. sequence, and which is yeah. fine. It's just not scary, because I was like, oh, right. now it's like we have a foe, like we have severed all emotional ties to the people that these used to be. Like, we're now just considering these three people to be one giant demon creature, not the family mm-hmm. that we used to know and love. But I did appreciate the shock value of the, like, gallons of fake blood that they used.
Yes.
That was incredible. So much fake blood.
We had a nice little shining moment.
Yes. Huge amounts of fake blood. And using the chainsaw, excellent. Excellent use of chainsaw. Mm-hmm. The, like, chainsaw into the decapitated head of her sister and then punting her head into the wood chipper was just, like,
hey,
so thorough.
I would never use a chainsaw like that. I just can't imagine, like, taking a chainsaw and putting it, like, tip down into somebody's head like that. I'm like, go for the easiest thing, which is the neck. Just, I know why they did it, because it looked so cool. But that choice was like, I'm not with you on this one, girl. Like, this seems like the chainsaw could get away from you very fast.
I know. I bet chainsaws are heavy. I've never actually held one before, but it yeah. seems like it would be hard
we
to
should.
Wield.
We should go grab a chainsaw and just hold it and like, turn it on and just see what it's like, because I have to imagine it's kind of a beast to control. I just wouldn't choose to do it that way.
I wouldn't want to hold a chainsaw that has a chain on it. I would do a chainless chainsaw.
We'll take the chain off.
Okay.
Yeah. Just so we get a sense of what it feels like. I think it's very important to the authenticity of our show that we each hold a chainsaw and try to slice a watermelon top down with said chainsaw. How the heck is this little girl going to ever recover? Poor Cassie.
I think that they really try to make us believe in this movie that she's already processed this when she's like,
she'll be all right.
You're not my mom anymore. I mean, she's got like her little one-liners and she's like with her aunt now. But I mean, she watched her sister get lit on fire by her brother.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, stabbed her mom with the scissors.
Her mom, like, yeah.
I mean, everything is just horrible. I know. It makes me sad to think about little kids in horror movies because I'm just like, oh, you have so much life ahead of you to deal with this.
Yeah. This is not fair that this happened to you. Like, kids, I mean, there's kids in like war-torn countries and kids with broken homes. Like, all those things are extremely tragic, of course. But this is like also on top of that, like, you're the one killing your family members.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother level.
I know. It really gets you.
Yeah. Do you think, now kind of circling back, because we're talking about the end of the movie, circling back to the epilogue, which we get shown in the beginning of the movie, do you think Jessica could have just escaped if she had left the apartment building quicker? Okay. Because I was thinking that, like, this girl, that's so victim blamey, right? But like, if she had just left, the spirit may not have entered her.
Dude, I know. I am so oblivious to things that I think I would have just gotten into my car and left and not been like, what's going on in this parking lot around me? Why is it covered with blood? But the fact that she like looks around and is like screaming and like freaked out, I was like, this is really opening you up to possession here.
You need to ignore this. Very scary movie, I think.
So scary. So good. Such a good movie.
Anything else we should call out before we give our recommendations?
I mean, the only thing I'll say is that even though this was not directed by Sam Raimi, this was obviously very, very lovingly written and directed to be part of this franchise. Like,
yes,
it is so gross. This movie is so gross. Like, there's so much vomit in this movie.
We didn't talk about the vomit. Yeah, there's so much vomit.
And it's like white, viscous, gooey vomit. It's horrible.
It is. Also, guys, there is a cheese grater scene. I'm not going to say anything else other than that. Cheese graters in a horror movie are bad mix, but it's great.
This movie is shocking and scary and disgusting, and also manages to be like a little bit goofy, like kind of funny in some scenes, a little bit campy. I mean, you can't have a scene where someone spits an eyeball out of their mouth into someone else's mouth and like not be a campy Evil Dead movie.
Right. Yeah, he wrote that down as like, okay, this was a little silly.
It's a lot of personality. But with that, I would highly recommend this movie. It was so good. It really, really exceeded my expectations.
Yep. I don't need to add on a whole lot more to that. If anything, I wasn't expecting a ton. It's an 84% horror movie. You guys should definitely go check it out. It's great. And if you're an Evil Dead fan, I also think it's a great addition to the series. And it's definitely worth watching.
Absolutely. It is a very good, actually scary movie. like, that's, I think, remarkable. I think a lot of times, like, yes, well-rated scary movies end up being more like psychological thrillers or something. And, like, this mm-hmm. one's, like, actually scary, hard to watch.
It's just horror.
Really good.
Yeah.
Definitely go check it out.
Well, next week we're going to tone it down quite a bit. We're talking about Casper. We're back on our ghost. Yeah, a little different. We're back on our ghost journey for the year. And so we wanted to do a callback to our kids season and do a kid ghost movie. So we hope you enjoy Casper. This was Not Quite Dead.
Check out our other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at Not Quite Dead Podcast and on Twitter at NQD_podcast.
Follow our blog for bonus content at notquitedeadpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
And happy watching.